Yes, oh great humans and the attendant throngs of spirits that have come with you. So part of the trickster medicine model is, you know, we're reintegrating the astro-mythological story. You know, the 1960s, in the early 60s, 62 to 68, Uranus representing awakening, change, disruption, and Pluto, death, rebirth, came together. And now they are what's called squared, which is, it's sort of like the first quarter moon of the 60s. So how do we integrate that? So for instance, in the 60s, we had the power, we go, that's good, but it's very Mars. And so part of our changing mudra, you know, we'd go, you know, into blessing. And so I have Muti. Muti means power and medicine. It's from the South African Sangomas. So we say all power is that which really heals. So the Muti is mixed of coyote hair and tobacco and South African plants. And so we go, oh, spirit of the trickster redeemer within each one of us, awaiting this moment in history, you know, open our path before us that we may be agents of cool as an antidote to a hot, reactive world. There we go. So fist into blessing. We want to transform many things. You know, a part of my trickster medicine, you know, is a dedication to the power of language and metaphor and story, that our language, metaphor, and story, you know, kind of line up with our dreaming intention. So many of us, you know, how do we not bespell ourselves? So many of our team and good-hearted people, you know, talk about fighting global warming and fighting for peace. And we go, fight, yes, that's a very hot word. It's a word that we can use sometimes, but we want to examine all default settings. You know, when we say, yo, allies, agents of the trickster redeemer within us all, what does that mean? We go, well, deriving everything from nature, we say, you know, in nature, some seeds only sprout after cataclysm, after a fire or after a flood. And by analogy, in us, some qualities of intelligence only come alive at a time of dire beauty. And that's what I like to call, and many indigenous people and all of us, you know, call the trickster. The trickster represents nature's evolutionary experimental ingenuity. And it is to that that we're really dedicated, you know. So we think of each person and all the spirits here as agents of cultural trickster redeemer. Yes, indeed, that reverent renaissance may rise from the rubble. So it is a powerful time, you know. Cooperators are standing by, so let's meet some of the cooperators. And I love, you know, the etymology of the word human comes from humus, which means dirt, and from which we get our word humble. So there's a lot of talk about ascension. We go, well, yeah, ascension, but also descent, you know, to dirt, to humility, you know, really equally kind of crucial. And, you know, in place of fight, you know, a hot reactive word, we might go, you know, dance with, spiral. We'll be bringing in more, you know, amplitude of words. And Uranus the trickster says to each one of us, we don't really care, we gods, don't really care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it be from freedom and choice. So no default settings. Now the trickster within all of us is unexpected, uses unexpected language. All expected language already has a prison waiting for it. You know, especially the words IST, you know, environmentalist, activist, you know, the reality police already has a little prison for that. I like saying that, you know, I'm crossing all borders, going to the underworld, talking to conservatives, going to different conferences and whatnot, and to be unexpected. So, you know, Ayn Rand, right-wing Viennese economists, all named Wolfgang, came up to me at this conference and said, and who are you? And I said, I am Coyote Network News. I am a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And they were like, oh, that is so cool. Now, if I'd said I'm a, you know, pagan environmentalist, you know, who cares? Yeah. So we're invited, you know, even in the course of this, and then I'll be doing a kind of deeper ritual working Monday night as a trickster training council. But here we are in this, you know, Asclepion, this temple of dedicated dreaming, healing, and theater, convincingly disguised as a Hilton. So we want to shapeshift. So I love the Celtic phrase to dree our weird. It means to play our role in destiny. And we say some things are always true, but there are times when they are truer. So it is cool. It is the dark of the moon. It is the dark of the moon. There's a new moon tomorrow. That new moon signals Chinese New Year. So we're in the last moments of dragon year, handing dragon to snake. And we love all of these metaphors to cooperate with. I love the coinciding of Obama's State of the Union address on Tuesday with Mardi Gras. The model is there's something called Kairos time, mythological time. It says it's a crucial moment in history where everything that everyone does matters enormously, but as a kind of advantage to life, it's a time when the imaginative spirit, invisible world is especially gliding into the material manifest world. So regardless of anybody's, you know, harumphitude or not about Obama, it is an opportunity Tuesday night at 5 p.m. wherever you are to invite the spirits of New Orleans to surround him and suffuse him. So many people use the word about Obama. They go, "Oh, I'm so disappointed," and I go, "God, is there no other word? Was this like a Reality Police talking point memo that was handed out?" You know, there's that quality of disappointment, and we go, "Let's use other words and other language." Dis means underworld, and as a prefix, dis-ease, dismay, disappointed. And it's good to go to the underworld. Linguists say, you know, dis means where we journey to the underworld, where our souls can speak more deeply to us. So it's good, but any repetitive use of language is kind of suspect as a part of the Reality Police. So to dree are weird. So here we are. It is Saturday. It is Saturn's day. We have a 7-day calendar week because of 7 visible planets. That's really why. You know, all cultures derive their calendar and their story and their myth from sky-earth interaction. I was just in Chichen Itza for the Mayan calendar rollover. I was with actual Mayan scholars and then with the crazy debacle of the Synthesis Festival. You know, but a great Maya ally there said, si no estamos felices ahora, que estamos esperando. If we're not happy now, what are we waiting for? I love that. We are here, estamos aquí. And I love, part of our dedication here that we want to spiral forth is que nuestra especie tenga buenos modales y amabilidad. May our species have manners and a willingness to cooperate with nature again, a kind of humility again. That as though, like in Chinese landscape paintings, where it's big nature and then a little teeny human figure way down at the bottom, and we go, yes, that would be good. So each one of us, you know, here has a unique medicine to contribute, known or unknown. And so I always operate off of the astrological chart of right now, you know, who are the cooperators that are standing by. So we do want to honor, you know, the Saturn model. Saturn's day, where is Saturn? Saturn's the only planet below the horizon right now, so it has this deep emphasis. And Saturn represents authority. And part of our dynamic is to inhale authority back from where we might have been outsourcing it personally or collectively. We'll kind of play with this. But a gift from the planets right now, from the world story right now, says each moment awaits our dedication to animate the desirable. And the pattern of now says inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. So for each one of us to think about, well, what am I devoted to? What am I dedicated to? And this language of astrology, you know, loves us all and says, you know, invites us to think of our lives like spiritual detective novels in which everything is a pertinent clue. There's a cycle, I'll keep introducing them, but we're pretty intimate here, so feel free to go, say that again, or slow down, or that does it, I'm leaving. Or any compassionate heckling is completely welcome. So Jupiter chimes in, Saturn, Scorpio, deep, serious part of us. The planets represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world. So as I kind of bring them in and aspire to give them voice, you know, think of each part of us going, oh, no, no, good, good. So Jupiter, Saturn, Scorpio, Jupiter, la, la, la. It says, you know, the genius of reggae music. It says the darker the lyrics, the jauntier the tune. We want a playful attitude when journeying through difficult and dark places. And that's also unexpected. So Jupiter says to each one of us, whatever you wanted to do 12 years ago, which is one Jupiter cycle, culture wasn't ready. You know, we weren't ready, now we're ready, so is the culture, which we'll play with. You know, so the dedication magnetizes opportunity, you know, for all of us to be agents and messengers of guiding metastory. So the model is inward and outward. We like complexity, inward dedication, you know, as we define ourselves and inhale authority back from the world, it strengthens our signal so that we're more likely to encounter people, conversations, funding, you know, that is in resonant accord with our stated intention. So it's always a good idea, but it's a particularly good idea right now, even this weekend, this new moon, this Mardi Gras state of the reunion, you know, so many things, to just even sort of scribble down for oneself one's manifesto of dedicated devotion. You know, what am I dedicated to? And when we think of our lives like spiritual detective novels, it just goes, what do I have an affinity with? What animal, what plant, what color, what quality of philosophy? Because Jupiter says we're going to brew them all into a unique, for everyone, syncretic brew, which is part of one's contribution. I love the word complicity. You know, it just means not shame, not blame, but whatever is going on in our personal lives or collective lives, we are complicit. We are contributing creativity to it. And once we realize that, we have the option of inhaling back, going, oh, no. And see, Saturn on its deepest level, what I love to proffer to our team is when people get all finger-waggy and righteous, Saturn on its deepest level, you know, it's like Ho'oponopono in Hawaiian. It says, heal the world by going within. And so Saturn, for each one of us, authority, is the part of us that receives the ancestral or cultural conditioned script. And unbeknownst to our conscious selves is the casting director in the movie. So a useful thing, you know, to take with us and kind of play with and practice is when something undesirable happens in our lives or in the culture, to say, I wonder why I would have been casting that in the movie. And in case I have been, I'm throwing it into Pluto's cauldron and a major story rewrite. Okay, you know, and say now, you know, I love part of the play with words. The word ecstatic means to stand outside. And it's a wonderful reframe, because we say for a trickster, better a trickster than a martyr be. You know, so not, oh, whaley, but hmm. And ecstatic, it means, like I was at the Obama Peace Inaugural Ball, which of course, you know, full of peace activists all fighting with each other, which is part of our it's part of our conundrum, right? But some of them were like, those people don't respect me enough, and that group doesn't whatever. And I would go, that's because you have an ecstatic relationship to them. And it's like, oh, this guy. You know, I work for, you know, befoiled and adorable Pacifica Radio, you know, and I live in D.C. God, love it. But the station there doesn't carry me, but I'm carried on KPFK and KPFA. And I used to be grumpy about that, going, whoa, and I go, no, I have an ecstatic relationship to Pacifica Radio. So it's a fun thing to play with, to transform one's feeling of outsider or exile. Oh, that's great. Oh, hello, welcome. That's very good. Just playing with, that's right. No, he's an esteemed colleague arriving. So the concept of complicity means, you know, whatever's going on, we can inhale back, you know, and the literalizing of metaphors, you know, says Pluto, death, rebirth, you know, proffers to us a cauldron, a composting alchemical cauldron. So even just, you know, as we cavort together or, you know, whatever we're doing, to think of what would we like to toss into the composting cauldron, and then what would we like to ladle out? You know, so that's why, you know, the power of myths and language and metaphors are so important. You know, because I, you know, do radio where there's, you know, callers on some occasion, and many of our team will use this metaphor and go, we've got to hold this person's feet to the fire. And I go, ooh, that's so waterboarding-ish. That's so torture-ish. How about, you know, that's so in line with science and tortures, you know, kind of gleaning knowledge from torturing creatures. And, you know, so I invite us all to compost that metaphor, that we not be complicitous with torture. You know, hold somebody's feet to the fire. Ugh. You know, how about tickle them until they have an orgasm? More, you know, or until sane reverence descends around them. So more play with our language and metaphors is kind of crucial. So we are here Saturday, Saturn's day. And let me just guide us a little bit into the realm of Saturn. Saturn is stationing now. It rises in the morning. You can see it. It looks like it's slowly moving forward. It's at its stationing degree. And then it will retrograde on February 18th, on President's Day, we're just looking at all these clues, you know, retrograde, inward, 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 deeper, deeper, deeper. And so there are metaphors for each degree of the zodiac, and the metaphor for Saturn's degree, where it's spending all winter, is renaissance, you know, deeper dedication to renaissance. It's like, you know, Leonard Cohen says, from deeper and darker places in the heart, we rise to play a greater part. You know, humans shall have commonwealth again. You know, thank you, brother Leonard. Just as Mercury, voice and intellect, is stationing and retrogrades February 23rd, just for the fun of it, and goes direct forward motion again on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. So we love the stories, you know, making metaphors available to us. And I love, you know, how do we become agents of Renaissance and agents of cool? You know, many of my team have been traveling with me for a while, but I'm just going to put it on our table again, too. We get the word cool from a Yoruba word, kulukulu, and it meant completely responsible. It's a Saturn word. One would say that guy is really cool. He takes care of the community in Yoruba. So that word, popularized by jazz musicians in the 40s, it also means in Yoruba, kulukulu, it means cool, like temperature, just as it does in English. And so they, like all indigenous and wise cultures, know that words are magic. You know, and it is time for us to avail ourselves of so many kinds of power, you know, to be, you know, agents of Renaissance, so power of words, to use them with dedicated intention. So the Yoruba say, if we literally, and we could just do that now, imagine our heads as cool, and we take all the heat in our head and move it to where it belongs, which is heart, you know, then we are cool-headed, warm-hearted, capable of being, again, agents of cool response in a hot, reactive, conflagration world. You know, it's the opposite of road rage, you know. So we want to become less reactive. If we love freedom, you know, we know that to react to anything is not free. But to cultivate an ever larger repertoire of responses, then we are in cahoots with nature's evolutionary ingenuity. I love The Art of Peace. It's a wonderful book to carry around. By Morihei Ueshiba, who founded Aikido, a brilliant strategy. He says, it is necessary to develop a strategy that utilizes all the physical conditions and elements that are directly at hand. The best strategy relies upon an unlimited set of responses. So, you know, when we're not in hot circumstance, and when we're here right now in a pretty safe realm, you know, and the world is roiling out there with so many people under hot reactive pressure, in which we would react as well, something precious we love, killed close to us, we would react. So those of us here now get to, again, cultivate, you know, a repertoire of cool response to spiral into collective mind, to be available to those members of our dream who are in difficult circumstance. You know, we maintain kinship with those journeying in the underworld, in so many ways. So right now, Saturn is squared, 90-degree angle to Venus. All squares, 90-degree angles, you know, in sort of old fogey astrology, it would say, oh, very bad, difficult thing. And we go, well, no. A lot of the gloomy parts of astrology are really kind of misreadings of, if you're not following the instructions, then you encounter bumpiness. But everything is instruction. You know, our word disaster means against the stars. The word consider means with the stars. So let us consider that squares, are a false estrangement brokered by the reality police to render people ineffective, feeling powerless, and therefore obedient. But it's an assignment to get these things to dance together once again. So we can think of a lot of false estrangements in the modern world. People say, oh, you know, the heart or the mind. We go, that's crazy. They love each other, heart and mind. We say, you know, intellect and science over mysticism. And we go, that's crazy. They love each other. You know, pragmatic mysticism. You know, so almost any kind of false polarity says both. And as we become increasingly effective inviters, you know, to say you can be super sharp, smart intellect, and you can be a mystic as well, as was once the of course-ness, it gives people that permission. So Saturn to Venus.
Have you heard about, like, the Rainbow Bridge? It's basically taking like the chakra points, like said, and building from the heart and to the mind, and basically connecting, you know, and that energy and like having them work together. And it's like it's a movie back in the 60s, about late 60s, early 70s, and it's called The Rainbow Bridge, and it talks just about using your heart and mind and how we have cut off our, you know, how we are cut off from our heart, and then we just use our mind, our intellect, but we feel, you know, it's like an imbalance, you know,
right,
and we can all feel it. But then when you cross the, you do the Rainbow Bridge, basically saying, taking the colors of your chakra points and then connecting it to your mind, and then it all, you know, it all comes together, you know, it all, like high time bridges connects to it.
Right. No, that's wonderful. So much of what you say, the Rainbow Bridge, I will look more, I find more, we'll magnetize it. The word metaphor means bridge, which is, you know, when we have a metaphor, it means to carry across. But you're bringing up really, really crucial, important things. You know, the model is, you know, in astrology, when it tells people, oh, that's scary, it just means, oh, if we outsource our Saturn, our authority, our mind, or our heart to somebody else, we should be afraid, you know, going, oh, and then how do we inhale it back in? And part of what we're here to kind of remedy, you know, is, you know, the culture of collapse and empire and then Renaissance rising from that rubble has encouraged or has conditioned people to outsource leadership to those who are only cunning mind, no heart. Yeah, exactly as you're saying. And we get to say, in case we've been outsourcing leadership to incompetent sociopaths who've lost their sense of kinship, in case we've been doing that, we're throwing that into the cauldron, we're inhaling our, and we're spiraling out going, here's what we're hiring, here are models of leadership that are desirable. And I so prefer, this is where I run into grumpiness on our team, I so prefer working in that collaborative way with Obama. You know, and people go, oh, I'm going to go, no, he's so multi-leveled. And yes, he's imprisoned by being head of an empire. And there's the military thing. There's all kinds of things. And there's also our culture, you know, the whole skull and bones at Yale, which is from which a lot of financial and political leaders mm-hmm. emerge. They actually do a ritual in which they sever their connection to their heart. Mm-hmm. I know. It's really black. I mean, that's black magic. And so they do a ritual in which they go, my heart, my feeling is weakness. I cut it. And then the culture says, well, then you can be a powerful guy. You know, it is amazing. So we're here to antidote that, going, no, 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 and here's the thing. You know, so the idea of the fist into the blessing, you know, and this is where I find Obama so mythologically responsive on many levels, and again, some of our grumpy team don't want to kind of hear it, but like at different gatherings, Obama gave all of his Nobel Peace Prize money to this African educational group, and just nobody heard about that. He just did, and I ran into a number of the groups who were pretty sciencey, you know, kinds of guys. But they said, you know, there were three of us on the board of directors, and the night he did that, all three of us dreamed he came to visit us, and we all had the same conversation with him. Like, oh, there's so many levels of reality that we want to be open to, and the memosphere, the imaginative realm. You know, so for instance, like at different gatherings in Washington, you know, and there's our Stop the XL Pipeline team, and all, you know, but I often go with, you know, my Muti and have my cute team of tricksters that meets virtually on Monday nights, and we go critique everything, be savvy and discerning, but bless it all, you know. And so I said, you know, there's that wonderful Hafez quote that says the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners. And a number of people have said, well, let's think of Obama as a beautiful and rowdy prisoner. You know, toss him a key. But also on the metaphoric level, you know, let's see the ancestors, you know, of people and his mother who was extraordinary and the flora and fauna ancestors placing a cloak of guiding earth wisdom and protection around his shoulders. And the last time I did that, I was just went to the White House, you know, and had the thing and the Muti, and the minute I did that, Obama stepped out of the White House and spent a great deal of time kind of waving to everybody. I go, there's many levels. We go, yes, 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 critique, yes, terrible, yes, drones, bad, yes, that's all true. You know, and that's, again, the power of storytelling that we can all be agents of. The five-act structure is tragedy, but five-act structure is here we are. Act two is away, the journey. Act three is oops, uh-oh. Act four is evil, whoa. And act five is the wedding, the redemption, the kiss, the renaissance, the how it could be. And part of our dynamic as storytellers, as agents of ingenuity and blessing, you know, is a friend of mine who kind of gave me that structure, playwright, said, either in modern storytelling, you know, kind of coming out of Hollywood and everything, it ends with act four, men grappling in high places and boom, boom, bang, bang, you know, and rape and oppression and there, go home. Or it skips act four, the actual resolution, you know, grappling with what's really difficult and bad, you know, and tacks on a happy ending, but it has no power. So we like the five-act structure, which takes place in a gathering even like this, or a party, or an event, or something we plan. Here we are. Off we go. Uh-oh. Ooh. Will we address these things? Ah. You know, precedes ah. So often. And so Saturn's for Venus, you know, part of the thing, I'm on a panel tomorrow with Catherine Austin Fitz and Kimberly Gamble on reuniting money, magic, and consciousness. So Saturn squares Venus going, yeah, loss of intimacy about, you know, by outsourcing leadership to people who've lost a sense of kinship. And right now it says, well, let's get the invisible and the visible back together. Part of the trickster dynamic that I love so much is a wonderful friend of mine years ago said, you know, the modern concept of worship with all this ascendant stuff and everything and supplication, she said, it's kind of degraded. And she said, in indigenous culture and in the Mediterranean, there was great reverence and respect between the backstage, invisible, mysterious, divine, and the onstage, manifest, tangible world. Great reverence and respect. But she said, but it was a much more collaborative endeavor. You know, that when we dedicate and make something beautiful, it is an invitation for powerful magic to enter the world. And that the spiritual seeks incarnation as much as we seek connection with it. So when she said this, I go, I love this, democratic animism. As long as we have a hierarchical spirituality of like, oh, we're going to get Dick Cheney. You know, so this idea of cooperating with everything, you know, magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. And animism, that everything is alive. What my friend Robinette also said is she said, language can liberate or constrain. She said, once we had a word for God, we were out of the garden, because then it was something outside, as opposed to imminent everywhere. You know, so I like us all, you know, kind of sucking the G out of kingdom. You could join with me if you want. Sucking the G out of kingdom and exhaling it to where it belongs, which is everywhere. And what it leaves is the kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, once we get rid of that G thing. So again, these are, you know, powerful plays. So Saturn squares Venus going deep inward, and the relationship to money, to art, the true power of art, which is most art is invisible, you know, most of art is invisible. There's the dedication of the artist who puts the mojo into that thing, you know, and then the last part, which is visible. You know, it's like, again, in Tibetan art, you know, they might make a Buddha by going Buddha form, prayers, chanting, semi-precious stones, cover that up. More, chanting. You know, so that what we're seeing is 10% of the art. What we're feeling, you know, is a lot. So this, you know, this time of going, when did art first happen for humans? What's the originating impulse? And Venus is art and beauty and kinship and the art of invitation. You know, and so, you know, in Standing Stones, where the sun on the solstice, you know, illumines the painting at the back of the cave, or the cave art, you know, from 35,000 years ago, which is incredible animals emerging from the rock. You know, what's going on there? It's inviting invisible power in and offering it a Saturn template or structure. Come in, sun's light. Come in, dedicated music. And animate this story, this structure. So, you know, that idea also of the that we all be agents of inviting. And says as a strategy, you know, let us be, you know, inviters from empire and collapse going down and the horrible bad story going down to the new story coming up. A few people in this room, hello, have heard me say some of these things over and over, but I love quoting Alan Watts, who says, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. You know, so it's like, well, here's empire collapsing. You know, row, you bastards, runs on fossil fuels, and it's collapsing now. Empire, you know, going down. Okay, culture of reverent ingenuity, kind of coming up from the rubble. And so, what we want to be is inviters. You know, from that which is going down to that which is coming up, and to not presume we know, to presume that it's an invitation to everyone, because you never know. And which is why we want to discern but not judge. Whatever we speak to in another person is what we're inviting to dance with that corresponding part of ourselves in the capoeira kind of magic circle. And see, when we judge somebody, we're inviting the least evolved part of them to dance with the least evolved part of us, and it's just never pretty. You know, so to bypass and to realize that everyone, no matter how befoibled, you know, everyone can be redeemed. There's amazing stories around, you know, I don't know how many of you know about the Westboro, you know, Baptist Church, which is full of hate, you know, right, and they show up at funerals and everybody's funeral and go, you know, die, faggots, and whatever. Well, the woman head of it, the woman Sion, just left. And she said she's had a complete change of heart. She posted something on a gay blog. And she said, you know, and it's a really exquisite thing. And we go, wow, there's no one who can't change. Or at least we don't know. The better default setting is to wonder, you know, how the hardened, hate-mongering heart can bloom again. You know, and see, the trickster model is, you know, is our manner of relating offering or imposition, that we offer, you know, woof woof, want to play, and if somebody doesn't, you keep moving. But we don't have a reaction if they don't. You just go on to this other thing. You know, would you like your heart to bloom again? Wonderful, let's talk. And if not, whatever. So that's it. There's amazing. And so that's why, you know, part of, you know, why am I in Washington, D.C., I often wonder. But I do step out of the ghetto of agreement. You know, by being there to talk to cops and to talk to right-wingers and whatever and go, whew, okay, it's challenging. And there's much hate and danger and vitriol. And you know, think of Obama. Think of the like being a star basketball player, the amount of force you're having to deal with, having so many people hate you. It's like, wow. And we do want to break the spell. Again, regardless of anyone's feelings, it is part of our dreaming, our weird, that we keep this man safe. It is, you know, essential to our cultural unfurling that's really important. And we can do that in myriad ways. But again, critique everything, you know, act four, important, you know, and bless it anyway. And the blessing doesn't have to be realistic. You know, in dealing with hot conflict, like, you know, again, a group of people who wanted to talk about Middle Eastern issues, and there were people there from the Israeli army and Palestinian poets. And my friend Neil Douglas Klotz, who does a lot of negotiations and kind of Sufi work in the Middle East, said, you know, the people we were convening, he said, these people are not ready for this conversation. It's just going to be ugly, you know. And I go, it wants to happen. Let's invite in trickster. Let's invite in what is better than all of ourselves. And so I just proffered, a guiding template for that gathering, which is people can say anything, you know, rah, 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 but then they are invited, magnetized, to offer a blessing about that thing. You know, and it was really interesting. And again, I invite us all to play with this. These are all things to kind of be practiced and to be willing to be agents of and to kind of invite in backup if it's appealing to you. So what happened, you know, people would say anything like, you know, the American people are so stupid, you know, and I would just go, and your blessing would be, and they go, blessing? Blessing? What the hell is that? I mean, Americans really don't know what a blessing is. I mean, just check it out. You know, when people go, oh, Obama is such a dingbat, and I go, and your blessing? They're like, blessing? What? You know, okay, so blessing, very radical, and it doesn't have to be this wimpy thing. So we've made peace and blessing kind of like, you know, but they're powerful. You know, it's part of the Venusian equalizing balance of blessing. So American people are so stupid, and you go, Any imaginative blessing will be an invitation for that thing to come into the world. May any time people hear lies on radio or television, may a council of wise wolves surround them and snap them out of it. You know, that'll do. You know, anyway, so what happened is people, you know, again, here or anywhere at any conference, when they go, the problem with that is, you know, the forces of up to no good are doing these terrible things. We go, yeah, that's important, Act 4. And your blessing would be, You know, come on, use imagination and animism, you know, to break the spell of colonialism. You know, how many of us dedicated to good, but yet there's sneaky ways of being, you know, in bespelled by the reality police. You know, anytime we derive status or feel more important than somebody or feel special, we're serving colonialism, no matter what groovy label we stick on our ass, you know. And so it's fun, it's woof woof wanna play. You know, and then the art of blessing. And, you know, I always kind of default to great ancestral mentor, you know, John O'Donohue, keeping alive cultures of blessing, the Celtic culture, the Middle Eastern culture. These are cultures of reciprocal blessing all day long. And it's a wonderful thing. So, you know, John O'Donohue says, you know, here's the kind of model of a blessing structure. When the ghost of loss stands behind you, as you gaze out the window, then may the ancestors place a cloak around your shoulders that will mend your life. You know. And when your boat is sinking in rough water, then may the moon spin a silver pathway upon which you may safely tread to shore. And, you know, for myself and others, you know, working with it, you know, we've kind of lost that art of blessing. And, you know, it's when this, then may this. You know, is a good structure to, again, you know, go home and try this at home and play with. And what happened with my team, and we can feel, you know, where it's an interesting spell we want to break, is people were pretty good at going, when this horrible thing, but when they got to, then may this thing, it got all abstract and blathery, you know, may happiness, may enlightenment, may, it's like, no, where's the cloak, the mango, the path? Remember, metaphors, you know, are magnetizing mojo. Metaphors are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. It's an invitation. So again, the coat, the mango, the thing, the sensual embodiment, you know, that powerful invitation to incarnational descent is something we really want to cultivate. Incarnational mysteries. You know, and the death and resurrection show. It says, whenever we dedicate in our own homes, we say a ritual is simply anything physical we do that we imbue with dedicated symbolism. So we can sweep the floor or sweep out the past while we're sweeping the floor. But we want to speak about what replenishes us as opposed to depletes us. You know, so adding dedication replenishes us to anything, by the making of this soup, by the whatever this thing is, by the placing of yellow flowers on this table, may only civil, jolly conversation take place. We're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. So, you know, the thing.
How long would this energy last? I mean, keep cycling.
Well, you know, it's always a wonderful myriad thing. You know, my aspiration when I do a personal astrology reading, available, but, you know, or anything, is to say, you know, what wants to be spoken of now. So, in the large sense, Uranus and Pluto, death, rebirth, together in the 60s, now at an angle of integration, meaning so much of what was unlocked in terms of esoteric spirituality and information technology and everything in the 60s was liberated. There wasn't complete equality. Now it's the time of integration, pragmatic mysticism. This pattern will be with us through 2015 for sure. And I did just, you know, I was part of the founding fathers and mother parade in this town, and I've been mixing it up with right wingers. So behind me on stage was this guy Richard Viguerie, which I don't know who he is, but he's like a Koch brother, major guy, and he was dressed as George Mason. I was Abigail Adams. Anyway, so I used what I like. I do love this line, you know, which is empires going down, culture of ingenuity coming up. You know, note that most cable TV shows are brought to us by Viagra and Cialis because empire just can't get it up anymore. And Richard Viguerie was like, I will never be on stage with that woman again. And I go, oh, well. And good luck to you too. I also see the trickster spiraling. You know, sometimes, I mean, I do go into, you know, non-supportive environments, and you know, I just remember somebody, you know, coming up and going, I've never been so insulted in all my life, and I go, the evening is still young. And there could be more, you know. So that spiral, you know, again, expanding our repertoire when somebody comes and is grumpy and goes, "Ah, you did this," and I go, "Well, you know, fair enough. Let's join hands and jump into the cauldron together and say, if there's anything in either of us that is not dedicated to greater good, let it be bubbled away." And some people are like, "Whoa," and some people are like, "Oh, that is kind of cool." You know, so again, our experiment, woof, woof, want to play, but with no reactive grumpitude if somebody doesn't. Which is why, again, the powerful metaphor, things that are in your magic backpacks, things that we've always had, like Dorothy's slippers in The Wizard of Oz, but forgot that we had this power of metaphor. So let's say each one of us has a harumphitude composter that can compost it into, you know, creative juice. So this is really useful. I you know, it folds into just a little nothing. You can carry it in your pocket. But whenever I find myself like going, better to compost harumphitude before speaking, because then there's real clarity as opposed to this hot reactive, you know, tar baby. No, just there. So harumphitude composting, good. You know, that's a good play. So these incarnational mysteries, it's like, you know, I did mention the word ecstatic as meaning to stand outside. And see, a lot of, you know, to not be counting on community support, but on counting on one's own autonomous support to dedication and the kind of mojo backup that comes from that. So ecstatic means to stand outside. So again, whenever we feel waifish or dissed or outside, we go, that's because we're ecstatic. There's a freedom to it. It's the same as our word sacred. Our word sacred comes from a word sacer, and it was posted outside Greek and Latin Roman villages, and it was not a good thing. It said, if you go past this sign, you are sacer. You are outside the protective conditioning of the community, and we don't recommend it, you know. So sacer is where we get our word sacred. It means leaving the community, going outside community conventionality, you know, to climb the sacred mountain that the elders said not to, to do this thing, but then to return. And see, that's part of our dynamic. You know, we say suffering is not a credential, it's an assignment. You know, for many of us who grew up going, my voice was not respected in my family or in the culture. And we go, excellent. Then, you know, then for each one of us who might feel that way, it says, well, then you have earned the right to be a voice for those things that don't have a voice. It's not, oh, whaley, whaley. It's like, it's a clue. It's a clue that one has, you know, earned that. So, so it says, you know, sake are sacred and ecstatic means it requires a liberation from the group in order to contribute to the group. Now, this is a part of fairy tales as well. You know, the person born into the court must go out into the wilderness, leave the court, wander, you know, in exile and also spiritual replenishment, but then return. So now in the larger fairy tale is the time of everyone returning, you know, coming on back. And in the Arthurian legends, you know, part of what happened was the round table, the council convened to protect the world, a perfect Venus-Mars balance. It was the round table of shining, radiant individuals dedicated to protection of life, positive heroism. But what happened at the end, or the sort of medium end of the Grail legend, is all the magical, spiritual people, you know, all left. Merlin leaves, Arthur goes to go take Pilates lessons in the underworld with women, whatever, you know, until now. The legend was, like with High John the Conqueror in New Orleans, that these hero trickster redeemers, they go into a period of invisible latency to be invited back at a time of, you know, dire beauty, which we go, now would be really good. But the idea is that the invisible would love to step in, but spiritual etiquette requires that we ask. And we ask when we do a dedication or even gather in this adorable, humble way, or anything, like whatever is an invitation, come on in. And you know, we're all working with this stuff, but over and over again, I find that when we can't resolve something by ourselves, when something is really difficult and brings us to our knees, that is an appropriate heart-opening dynamic in which one finally goes, let it, whatever is needed here, whatever is truly best for everybody at this moment, come on in. And you go, oh, that was so great. Why do we forget that? You know, just as a little example, there is there was grumpy people, I won't go into it too much, but grumpy people who were talking to Fox News at an astrology conference and saying annoying things like McCain was going to win and everything, and Fox News was loving it. And I was like, and then I was like, no, compost herumphitude. And they were going to be on a big panel in Fox News at the end of the thing on political astrology. And I was like, why am I not on that panel? Herumphitude, herumphitude. And I go, that's because I have an ecstatic relationship to the panel. That's fine. But compost herumphitude. And then I go, compost herumphitude, right. And then invite in what can resolve this. Going, all right, whatever is adorably perfect, trickster, come on in. And I go, oh, it's so much more desirable. And what happened was, there was a panel and Fox News was ready to film all kinds of annoying things, and the two people who were most annoying, both of them independently, their watches stopped and they were late and never made it on the panel. I'm like, ha! Yes! And when we tease it out into democratic animism, the Thai people say, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism, our sense that everything's alive, cooperators standing by. So I love, this in the larger world. And see, the trickster medicine is the, it's not the only medicine, but it's the sine qua non. It's the one that makes everything else work. So many ardent good environmentalists and spiritual people, they're not kind of working on stuff. And there's so much death in the world and things and in danger from the rapacious, dynamic out there. So I love, I've used this since it was happening in the fall, but it's a really good example. So Shell oil drilling in the Arctic, and they put up their oil drilling rig and have innumerable sort of catastrophes. And then friends of mine, wonderful friends who are there seeking to protect the Arctic and the beautiful ocean and so much life that we are all endangering. But they said, everybody agrees, and even Shell Oil on its website agrees. So they have their oil rig getting set to drill, and it's open water everywhere. And then way on the horizon is this iceberg. And it just moves directly from miles away, directly to the Shell oil drilling rig. Dum 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 dum, causing Shell to go, oh, how odd! Whoop, got a skedaddle. And then their tugboat broke down, and then the tugboat towing the tugboat broke down, and we go, something's speaking to you, And again, the Uwa people in Ecuador, Colombia, whose lands were threatened by Standard Oil. And they said they would kill themselves if their beautiful land was destroyed. And then they said, no, wait, let us do ceremony. And they did deep ceremony for 6 months, in which they asked the oil to hide. And Standard Oil did 3 drillings, came up dry, packed up and left. And we go, we just want to amplify these mysteries of available experimentation. There's many examples. But it's, again, what indigenous people, know. Again, this good-hearted political dedication plus the mojo. And see, it's this estrangement. People have been either kind of spiritual or politically engaged, and one without the other just doesn't cut it. One is Hinayana honky salvation thing battery, and the other one is, irony deficient, grumpitude, ineffective, martyred, political martyrdom. We go, no, okay, so they need each other, and so it's this time of brewing things back together. Which is why I like the idea of, again, to be complex and to, the darker and deeper the journey, the more we want a jaunty playfulness. And that's where, when we say, the State of the Union address is on Mardi Gras this year, and I go, I love that, because Obama already quoted High John the Conqueror, and that's what got my ear when he gave his speech on race during the 2008 election, in which he gave a really actually grown-up, mature speech, we want to see more of that, and back up what that represents. No one person can do anything, and I've always said about any leader that they're the sail, we're the wind, and to critique and then bless, in some way. So High John the Conqueror is one of my favorite folk heroes anywhere. He is a great trickster redeemer. He is part of what comes when people from beautiful and complex civilizations in Africa forced into slavery, into Haiti and the Caribbean, and then on into New Orleans. High John the Conqueror, emerges, and it says he wasn't a man at first. He was a wish, a will, and then that wish and will cloaked itself in metaphor, and then it became an active force. There's a beautiful essay by Zora Neale Hurston on High John that is just fabulous. But he's like King Arthur. It says he goes to live in Haijan the Conqueror route to await the world's call at a time of dire necessity. Because he is the trickster redeemer who liberates everyone, even the tyrant, even the slave owner. You know, we're going to sort of find this. What is the trickster redeemer? Everybody. You know, willing, not counting on, willing to liberate everyone. And Haijan the Conqueror would finish everything off with a laugh, a liberating laugh. And the phrase that is resonant, that everyone in New Orleans knows, that's said about Haijan is, he would find a way out of no way and hit a straight lick with a crooked stick. And when Obama gave his speech, he said, you know, we have to find a way out of no way. And I'm like, ooh. He's quoting, he's inviting Haijan the Conqueror, the trickster redeemer of the South. And we go, ooh, this is good. So we're going to take that. New Orleans is such a place, again, like so much that is beautiful, so beleaguered, but I just have always felt that if the soul of this country had a physical address, it would be New Orleans. And as this place of confluence between the visible and invisible, you know, like Haiti, why, we wonder, in the world, do these places of exquisite animistic cultivation. You know, the slave revolt arises in Haiti at a Voudoun meeting. Again, Voudoun, beautiful and exquisite, dissed and trivialized in Hollywood and everything like that. But these are about commerce between the worlds, collaboration, and the power and mojo of art and music, and knowing that to social action. Why so beleaguered? And I think these are mysteries, but I think what it is for all of us is they have been holding the gate open between the visible and invisible, places like this, New Orleans and Haiti and Cuba. But it's incumbent for all of us to do that as well, to kind of lift the load from one people or one tradition or one country to go, we will back you up. But so in New Orleans, which is so resilient and so beleaguered and so, but the last time I was there, which was last spring, you know, its resilience is so strong, but Haijan the Conqueror, Mardi Gras, New Orleans, Marie Laveau, again, one of my favorite ancestral aunties, Marie Laveau, great voodoo queen of New Orleans, about whom it was said she did not create cultural movements, but a woman of her substance, you know, understood what was at stake and saw a role to be played and played it to the hilt, helping to coalesce a scattered and oppressed people into a dynamic culture. It was a moment of cultural ecstasy. And there's things in there. We don't have to create cultural movements. These things want to happen. There are larger forces. We want to be agents of them. You know, we want to see a role to be played and be willing, you know, going, oh, with backup, with mojo backup, you know, open path to let this be possible. So, you know, Marie Laveau, the medicine that she brings, I mean, she was a real human who could cross many borders. She was in good with the Catholic Church because, you know, her Cajun self could heal yellow fever. And she was in good with, you know, high-born white culture because the love of her life was a white man. They could not own real estate together, so he legally became black so that they could. She gets public executions banned. She does many practical things with this mojo. We're talking about pragmatic mysticism. You know, so when I asked her biographer, there's only one good book really about her. The rest is kind of superstitious nonsense. But Voodoo Queen, The Lives of Marie Laveau, because her daughter also. But when I asked her biographer, Martha Ward, well, what would Marie Laveau do now, you know, with all this? And she said, well, because she was a Virgo, you know, what she would do about anything would be first she would sweep her back steps to get rid of the past, as we're kind of willing to do. Then she would sweep her front steps to welcome in the new mojo. Then she would set her altars, just put everything in place. Then she would do her conjure dance, and then she'd go out and kick butt. You know, so this idea of the inward, backstage, mojo conjuring in order to be effective on stage, very crucial, available to all of us. You know, and again, you know, to the Virgo parts of all of us, which are important, standards and precision, says small things can have a big effect. It's why Virgo is called the ruler of ritual magic. When you know, the microcosm that connects to the macrocosm. When you move a small thing, when you change one word, it can do everything. I'm working with our team on the streets so often, you know, and they're like, you know, what do we want? You know, and I always go, better chance. You know, when do we want it? Now, you know. And if we just change one word, you know, what are we creating? Peace. When are we creating it? Now. Why wait? Why fool around? I'm very interested also in composting the word demand. You know, any tired language, I'm also not fond of empower, but any tired language, you know, just throw it into the cauldron, you know, and ladle out some fresh words. But demand, see, demand, I feel, is still unworked out supplication with daddy. You know, why not invoke it now? Why demand from the, as though the external, you know, has that power? And it's a subdivision of tantrum yoga, you know, going, as opposed to inviting it in, you know, may it be. So again, these are all things, you know, offered, you know, playfully. But so in a trip on an airplane one ago, you know, I mean, I'm always being sort of spying. So my seatmate is clearly some kind of middle level management, mega media kind of NBC guy, and so I can't help but look at his computer screen, where there's an edict coming on down from on high, from the height of this media thing, and it says, in the reporting of all stories, increase urgency, eliminate subtlety. Okay, so whether you're talking about the weather, like, oh, no, or the economy, oh, or the fiscal cliff, increase urgency, eliminate subtlety is a perfect way, a kind of state of off-balance hysteria, whereby people are kind of obedient and kind of directed, like, ugh. So we want to do the opposite. We want to increase subtlety and eliminate urgency. Because when people are like, finger waggy, you go, oh, you're inadvertently serving, you know, the larger forces of colonialism, you know. You know, again, to be agents of cool is a good idea. Yeah, there's some crazy things, as we know, you know, in our team out there. I am in favor of many conspiracies, investigation, absolutely. But we do want some standards. And, you know, where we want to compost all shenanigans and smoke and mirrors and being bamboozled. But I was amazed recently. There's a number of our team, possibly here. You know. Okay, so we do want to see patterns. We do want to, you know, go to the deep of things. We do want to resolve things. You know, there's WikiLeaks, which I'm grateful to. But the animistic version would be WiccanLeaks. WiccanLeaks. For WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks would be our may anything up to no good be revealed, rendered harmless, and an occasion for mirth. You know, which kind of handles a lot. There was a whole lot of people, you know, on Facebook where I do spend some time, you know, and posting these powerful grieving ceremonies about the Newtown children who were massacred. And then there was a bunch of people who go, you know, meaning no disrespect, but you know that the Newtown shooting of children was a, you know, Obama CIA black ops operation in order to confiscate all our guns. I'm like, no, 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 no. Oh, humans, let's put some discernment on the table. And, you know, in looking at the people who were propositioning this, they were, you know, the rest of them was all into kind of like yoga and stuff. And I go, right, let's do yoga with assault weapons. There we go. You know, shoulder stand with assault weapon. You know, I'm okay, you're AK. I mean, it catalyzed the whole riff going, you are dissonant. You know, let's just get our guiding meta story and some standards on the table. Meaning, you know, a little, your creative suspicion belongs at a suspicion on the profitability of the gun lobby and the politicians that they own. You know, yes, there are many false flags, you know, because then the person is like, well, you must not know very much. It's like, you whippersnapper, I know. But we do want discernment. You know, I also liked, you know, this, I don't know who's ardently here, but I liked, you know, a very sane, reverent, completely hip, spiritual science guy, talking to some friends who were just like crazed about chemtrails, and he said, you know, they don't exist. You know, there are bad things, there are weather experiments and whatever, and it's like, I love that. I love that chemtrails don't exist. I mean, but people can have it be their single issue, like, oh, and get all. We go, it's a dispel. You know, it's a spell. But the idea that the larger story to clarify, you know, about the, you know, yoga and assault weapons, not quite clarifying it, but being reactive, and a sneaky desire to feel important and finger-waggy going, if you knew what we knew, then we go, that's colonialism, there's a flag on that play, 5-yard penalty, declined. We say boom and bang are hyper-yang. You know, and we want to suck the false glamour out of all this boom and bang and gun thing. And so boom and bang, hyper yang, explosions, boom, internal combustion engine, rat-a-tat-tat, the killing of innocents, I mean, all of that. And that is whacked out Mars with no Venus. And where there's whacked out Mars with no Venus, I mean, all the fairy tales and teachings tell us when there's, you know, violence and whacked out Mars, what we need is Venus. Art, beauty, intimacy, kinship, the concepts of complicity, inviting in what is desirable. So, you know, so we just say we want to suck the glamour out of that Mars as a... I want to have the bumper stickers made, but I like saying tyranny is compensatory weenydom. anybody who's a tyrant just means they're just insecure. It's like the Viagra cable news thing. And the same with, you know, guns, yes, Second Amendment, yes, you know, hunt rabbits, yes, whatever. You know, the fetishism of outsourcing one's sense of safety to having assault rifles is insane. You know, and then there was, you know, anyways. But so I just wanted, I was like, oh my God, so parts of our team are delusional. And it discredits the authentic conspiracies that do indeed want to be investigated. So some standards, some learnings, some things on our work table would be really good. I just came from the Maya, you know, hoo-ha, and know some in-depth of Maya culture. Do not presume, you know, actual Mayan scholars, and so part of the dynamic, I'll say it's Jupiter, plethora, square Neptune, dreams, vision, illusion. So we want to translate ageless wisdom into vernacular and spiral it into the community. That's a positive dynamic. The symptom says we're in this phantasmagoric, you know, realm of infinite stories. And some of them can be delusions. In English, again, in ludo, illusion, which comes from in ludo, means in the game. Delusion comes from de ludo, which means out of the game. And it's useful to distinguish. Does this make me more participatory and intimate? It's a working illusion that we work with until we then no longer useful and we come up with another one. Or is it delusional? De ludo, you're out of the game. Just practicing tantrum yoga in a corner of the universe, you know. And so that, I think, is this a useful thing we want to animate? So we do want the critique, but we also want standards. So in the Maya thing, you know, I mean, it's been, you know, hyping for a million years, and some of it was just spiritual colonialism of people imposing their own teachings on Maya culture. And some of it was completely useful. And so in a foot in many, many, many feet in many camps, I would say to the grumpy, knowledgeable scholars, let not our high standards keep us from animating the good. And then to the sort of illusional good and delusional phantasmagoric fest, let's just put some standards on the table. Giving status from these stories, no self-importance. Let actual learning and distillation, you know, be occurring. And there were some other ones that I seem to have forgotten. But putting some standards on the table seems, you know, crucial. So if we're going for democratic animism, you know, and here's colonialism and empire going down and culture of reverent ingenuity cooperate with everything coming up, then we want to be, you know, sensitive to in this realm, you know, of conferences and expos and whatnot too, which is, so we'd say, I proffer, anything which encourages specialness and elitism is toxic and belongs to empire. Uniqueness, wonderful. We don't want to be special, because that encourages other people, or celebrities, that encourages other people to be passive. But we do want to be unique, because each person who cultivates their uniqueness encourages everybody else to cultivate their uniqueness, and then we're talking, then we're smoking. And so I think that's a good standard. So for me, you know, anything that is a kind of special, if you knew what we knew, then whatever, and we go, that's pulling rank, serving empire. We, the 144 enlightened masters, in touch with the space beings, in which there's a select few, and I go, we've heard that story. That's just, old colonialism dressed up in modern garb. It's, again, a collaborative And so we might just put some things on our work table, on our council table, is the trickster welcome, disruptive play. You know, again, like Groucho Marx, I do still love this. I used it once for real, which is, which is to say, you know, I've had a wonderful evening. This wasn't it, but I've had a wonderful evening. Gotta go. Because one leaves playful, you know, even if one leaves people who are bewildered behind. So keeping the spiral, see the spiral sacred to Venus. Venus forms a five-petaled orbital shape in the sky over 8 years. So five-act structures of storytelling, five-leafed plants, sacred to Venus. We want Venus to come in to, you know, to balance the Mars. That's in all mythologies. Again, there's too much hyper-yang, you know, boom and bust. You know, because then, I mean, irony and satire, I think, are really important. Because I do want to do the yoga murders and the yoga with assault weapons kind of dissonance. And I do remember the wonderful, I know yoga is wonderful and great, and I'm a terrible recidivist, but I'm composting my resistance to it. But I do love also the example of a friend of mine in a crosswalk in the Castro in San Francisco was, you know, a woman in a large SUV, you know, hit him and knocked him down and started to back up and drive away, but surrounded by, you know, a righteous group of you know, appropriate gay guys going, and she was like, oh. So my friend dusted himself off and was like, whoa. And the woman in the SUV said, well, are we done here? Because I'm late for yoga. And I go, oh, I love that. It's just so perfect. You know, we want irony and satire. We want irony and satire. We want play. You know, the trickster equal. You know, in any good community, I mean, here we are, kind of little mini community with Venus in Aquarius and the Moon in Aquarius and the Sun in Aquarius and New Moon in Aquarius tomorrow. Aquarius, you know, ruled by Saturn, structure, constraint, and Uranus, wildness. You know, I like to quip, you know, in we can be lonely on our own, but it takes a group in which to be alienated. You know, so how do we create groups, you know, councils where the unique trickster quality is of each person is welcome, you know, where it truly is equal, meaning people have different roles to play. I mean, right now I'm the person talking, you know, but we rotate. Again, deriving models of leadership from nature is a wonderful thing. You know, as many of some a few in this room know, you know, I love the model of wolf leadership. You know, the wolf leader doesn't operate on dominance, they operate on charisma. And the wolf leader, the leader of the pack, is the one who engages the creative ingenuity of the pack. So that's a wonderful leadership criterion. And then goose leader rotates because whoever's in front gets all the flack. So I myself love, you know, kind of syncretizing wolf and goose as going charismatic, engages the ingenuity of the group, good, and then rotates, you know, passes the baton. You know, or anything, you know, that we, you know, we say, that, what is it that makes our species unique? You know, because other species, I'm very non-humanism, I'm very animism. I don't think we're better than any other plants and flowers. I think that's a con, and that's a con that is a mistranslation in the Bible. Because the word actually used, you know, when God gave humans dominion, you know, biblical scholars have said, no, that's not the word. That dominion was a later invention. Like, the word Lord was never used. It only comes in feudal society later. So it's much more egalitarian. The word that was used was, and God gave humans the task and the opportunity to guide the other creatures to their essential nature. That's the word that was used, not dominance. You know. So what is possibly unique about our species? I live with so many interesting animals, and Stella Coyote sends her regards. You know. So I know that other species of animals and even plants have music, art, theater, religion, spirituality. So that's not special to humans. But I think that what we do have as a responsibility and an opportunity is our capacity to borrow qualities of intelligence from plants and animals that we admire. One drop of badger medicine, and the quality of plants. You know, so the more we know about nature, and see, I'm also very up for saying all mythic figures, metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. So I love all these different metaphoric availabilities. Like last summer, you know, somebody wrote an essay on Akilanda Shvara, And she's the Hindu goddess of the power that comes from being broken and smashed on the floor. And apparently that was a big hit. People were like, yes, bring her back, you know. And she rides on the crocodile of her own fear. Like, whew, that's fun. You know, so many gods and goddesses have a ride. Ganesh rides on a rat. Durga rides on a tiger. So inviting each one of us to think about, you know, what would be your ride? You know, and it can change, you know. But it says right now, heroism, Mars, has moved into Pisces, which is dreams and shape-shifting. It's the dream hero. The realm of imagination and metaphor is where cooperators are standing by. And Mars next to Neptune says, you know, the yang wants to be dreamer and to call upon qualities of, you know, that we like in the natural world or in the plant world, and to be humbled by the intelligence in our fellow flora and fauna. You know, that in innumerable radio shows with great botanists and whatnot, you know, all of nature is saying we're going to have to either kill the humans or heal them. Let's try healing them first. You know, and, you know, so Stephen Buhner, a great botanist, says he can walk around somebody's house and look at the weeds that are growing there and diagnose the illness of the person inside because the weeds are showing up to heal them. And it gives great examples. You know, on the East Coast where there's Lyme disease, this invasive plant species that came along with it is Japanese knotwood, which is the specific cure for Lyme disease. He says in Washington State, you know, the invasive plant species that everybody's trying to kill are specific for alcoholism and depression. And they're like, we're just trying to kill you. Oh, God, Roundup, Jesus. You know, manners, human manners, you know, and talking to everything, not deriving status. You know, I am a great hoo-ha talking to the plants. It's like, yeah, like everybody. You know, but again, you know, experiment. We love that. In the Grail legend, it says, inauthenticity, the land is dead and dying because of people's inauthentic lives. Inauthenticity arises when people look to external authority for inner guidance. And external authority, I think, see, our inner guidance taps us into the ongoing conversation that we live in a world in which everything's speaking to us by its shape, its color, its song, its rhythm, its movement. And if we just approach the world with kind of reverent curiosity, like, what's up with you? You know, then all the messengers would show up at the right time, this sense of restored collaborative kinship and willingness, you know, to cahoot and to cavort. Yes, so that we can be, you know, recombobulate the discombobulated. The one Saturn thing that was true about the Maya calendar rollover complexity, there was a lot of irony involved. Just like an astute listener in Los Angeles, where I have, you know, many great astute listeners who apparently get up at 5 a.m. There's a lot of interesting people awake at 5 a.m. in Los Angeles. But one of them first pointed out, you know how that little ribbony thing that is like heal breast cancer and, you know, bring the tropes home? That listener emailed me and said, you know, that's a broken infinity symbol. It will only suck power away. And I go, right. Sneaky reality police. So whenever I see it, I try and put the lower half on. Remember, like that. So I you know, when I see the kind of pink ribbon, I'm going, oh no, pink, the broken, and I go, no, you know, or bring the troops home, no, you know, put that, you know, at least imaginatively, if not just with graffiti, I always put the bottom half so it's an infinity symbol. In the same way, what happened with the ill-informed phantasmagoria of New Age culture without standards about the whole Mayan thing, there was a symbol called Hunabku, and a lot of people had it tattooed on their bodies, and it was also along with the misuse of the Aztec calendar on every single flyer, which has nothing to do with the Mayan calendar. So there was just huge kind of howly, honky ignorance imposed on this thing. But the Hunabku symbol, which everybody kind of loved, was a symbol imposed by Christian missionaries on the Maya to accept one God. So the New Agers were inadvertently worshiping colonialism because they didn't know any better. So we love knowledge. And we go, oh, Lord, the thing. You know, but what was true, which we can animate with informed reverence, is the and Maya culture, instantly complex, but certainly like New Orleans and like you know, all like New Orleans, like Haiti, like whatever, an exquisite, complex, collaborative theology between light and dark, like Bali. these animistic cultures of underworld, overworld, you would never find any of them talking predominantly about ascendance without descendance. You know, again, and this commerce between the visible and the invisible and the exquisite complexity. Now, they were gloomy, too, but, you know, and there's a lot of infinite complexity about Maya culture, but the thing that is useful to take with us, and it's different from the Aztec cosmology, you know, to be informed is to be reverent, you know, and really know stuff, as opposed to just everybody, again, imposing their own teachings and then just sticking 2012 on it, although that won't be happening anymore. There's a relief there. Yeah, there's a fire sale on the 20,000 books on 2012. But still, it's like, let's not, you know, Maya culture says, you never call, you never write anymore. You know, are you done with me? And we go, no. It's an ongoing thing. So there was a vase that showed the seven lords of time gathering to create this long cycle of time. On August 13, 3114 BC. And they did then show the seven lords of time gathering to reconvene on December 21st or 23rd, 2012, in Chichen Itza. And they were going to be regathering, this is a very Saturn thing, lords of time, to set the world in order. We go, all right, we go for that. You know, it's like, come back King Arthur, come back Haijan the Conqueror, seven lords of time, excellence, you know, powerful qualities of nature, yes, reverent renaissance, we are willing to be agents for you, we wonder. So we do want to play, again, with language, that's a whole other thing I'll be doing more on Monday night, we'll see. The Aztec cosmology, completely different, really, but they have a cosmology of the five worlds, each world is born of and will die of its thematic kind of theme. So they say the fifth and final world that we're in, although Aztecs also gloomy, but was born of and will die of busyness. We go, well, that works, you know. It's earthquake motion. But I also like to say that, you know, again, just playing, that the world is born of and will die of packaging. You know, because it's like, God, there's so much plastic stuff. And God. Let collaboration eclipse domination, you know, and we want to tease that into our willingness, going, all right, we're willing. But part of the Saturn model is great. It says we can't even be who we want to be by ourselves. We can't do anything by ourselves. That's why we take vows and dedication, going, this is the person, this is the experimental uniqueness to which I'm dedicated. Hold me to this, oh, however we address the universe, power of woof that animates the universe, or whatever, however you go, and that's the power of vows, which are particularly at a turnover like now, dark of moon, which is when elders gather to determine the course of culture, new moon tomorrow, Chinese New Year, you know, each moment proffers, you know, so when you appropriately ask, you know, how long will this be in play, well, Uranus Pluto, the death and reinvention, the necessity of Renaissance to rise from the rubble, by being willing to collaborate with nature's ingenuity in a humble way, that big theme is certainly through 2015 and certainly through this whole year really, really strong. Right now, what is unique to now is also what's powerfully large. So Neptune dreams vision, how a culture tells itself its own story through the images that circulate through mass mind, has just entered Pisces, the realm of all music, all imagery, making that available to us first time in 165 years, and we go, ooh, that's good. Mars and Mercury move pretty fast, Mars every 2.5 years, so Mars is right next to Neptune, so that's now, okay, in which it's a good time to reverse and redefine what positive yang masculine heroism is, the steward, the gentleman, the green man, the wizard, the dreamer, the cool guy, you know, who's responsible for the well-being of the community, all of that. And it's right next to Mercury, voice, whose image is sounding a bugle, calling in a tide of cultural energy. So we go, oh, that's good, too. You know, right next to Chiron, which goes around every 52 years. So there are many cycles. So when you appropriately, you know, queried, you know, how long will this last? We go, a minute, 12 years, 3 years, an age. This unique moment, but But on one level, it's a great question too, because people often, when I'm doing astrological readings for people, and I go, Jupiter says, I will make you wealthy by your definition of wealth. What is that? And their first question is, how long will it last and can I blow this? You know, and I go, yes, you know, we could, but it's interesting, it's your first question. And on some level, all transits are permanent. You know, especially, see, whatever we dedicate to, that's part of the calendar model, is that what we dedicate to, or maybe make a little statue or whatever, then that's a way in which we are taking that energy with us. We're traveling with it. So we go, we love the winter solstice energy. We love the power of death and rebirth theater. You know, so, and that's why, you know, like my buddy Martin Prechtel says, to feed the... You know, we're here to restore intimacy to the world. So he says, you know, have those things in your life that you know who made them. Or at least they come with an intimate story. You know, so I'm wearing this fantastic blouse that my Maya scholar friends found for me in Valladolid on Christmas Day. So it becomes, you know, a kind of dedication of the very positive mojo of that whole time period. You know, and friends of mine bought me this stone in New Orleans. So it becomes a positive ally of all the good mojo of last spring in New Orleans, you know. So, but we don't want to get attached, you know. It's like they're precious to me, and it's full of cosmology and complexity that I want to honor and study. But that's why people have things, you know, or even a ring. It's like you're keeping that moment with you for a time, and the willingness to collaborate, you know, with everything, which is again. Is our manner of relating an offering serves Renaissance and liberation, or an imposition serves tyranny, dominance, and colonialism, again, no matter what we call it. Which is why, you know, I'm just very ardent that we have our own tyrannometer. We can measure ourselves as well as others. But it's like if we're offering something to someone, we have no attachment to how that is received. You know, you go, here's this beautiful thing, and they go, and you go, onward. If we go, we go, it wasn't really offered then, was it? You know, and that model of speaking to each person, the radical subversiveness of applied divination and mythology and astrology is everyone, you know, has, you know, a dreamer, a dream hero, an artist, a leader, a trickster in them somewhere. It might have gone to sleep, it might have been conditioned and whatever, but each one of us, for ourselves and for others, when we speak to that part of somebody, it feeds that part of them that can come alive, which is why we want to leave room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways. You know, going, I know, it looks grim, but you never know. You know, you want to leave, it's like you never corner a mugger. You know, you leave somebody a way out. You know, you're leaving an invitational path. And I love my niece going off to visit, you know, with right-wing disapproving of divorced people, members of our family. And she just gotten divorced, and she's like, oh. And I go, I know, it doesn't look fun. But just leave a little skosh of room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'll try, you know. And then she called and she said, well, that was really interesting. She said, they met me on the porch with arms glowering eyes and arms folded, going, as you know, we strongly disapprove of divorce. But he was so boring and we're really very happy for you. Come on in and have some pie. You know. So again, you never know. You want to leave room, not count on it, because expectation is the partner of disappointment. Okay, it's a personal prison we carry around for ourselves and others. If we go to a conference or a party or an event expecting, we are wired into disappointment. Ah, oh no, all right, okay. But if we go willing, Uranus the trickster says to each one of us, you know, I will connect you through increased rate of synchronicity to the right conversation, the right person, the right whatever, and all I want from each one of you, says Uranus the trickster, is willingness. And so at some point, you know, even, you know, now, we just kind of accept the deal. We needn't believe anything, believe nothing, entertain possibilities, but you just go, all right, you know, what the hell? Whatever the coolest thing possible, you know, I'm willing, you know, we're willing, you know. Oh, just do it for me. We're willing, just, oh, oh, there you go. Okay, even grumpy person. Okay, there we go. Because you want to feel the difference between expectation and willingness. One is a prison. One is a liberation. You know, one is to be an agent of a prison, like, oh, I knew I wouldn't meet a cute guy at the party. Going expecting. But going willing is trickster agent of willing like intending and willing like what the hell, you know, available. Because then we're all agents of liberating. But that expecting. See, expectation, disappointment, it's why when people say, I'm so disappointed in Obama, it's like, you must have expected something, you dingbat. How about willingness to cooperate with everything, you know, no matter what? And that's why the gods don't care if we approve or disapprove of something. It's why those polls that are taken, you know, about do you approve or disapprove of this, are a complete waste of time as a reality police prison. The gods don't give a bleep if we approve or disapprove of anything. Are we willing to cooperate with it? Remember, in The Lord of the Rings, it's Gollum's overreaching that is crucial to tossing the Ring of Power back into the crack of doom. Everyone's got a role in the mystery play, and we do not presume to know what that is, but we are willing to wonder. You know, and wonder is a great thing, too. I mean, it says, you know, the great fuels for now, you know, our willingness, like, hey, what the hell? And wonder. I wonder what could be. Oh, because when you put those guys together, it says whatever we wonder about, I wonder, will attract the lightning of revelation. Now, I wonder what to do now. So that idea of, you know, willingness and wonder, these are humble and beautiful things. You know, these are, you know, ancient things, deconditioning things. These powerful planets, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, what they represent, large forces of nature's evolutionary ingenuity, they are about deconditioning from modern human mind. And so Neptune transits, which everybody's having to some extent, is uncertainty. Neptune says we dissolve certainty so mystery can happen. In the modern world, we're supposed to have a kind of budget and a plan and a five-year whatever it is, and although it's changing, you know, as friends of mine have said, you know, panic early to avoid the rush. So it is changing. But see, in ancient world that lives in our blood, not knowing was considered a fantastic accomplishment. You know, look, that person doesn't know. Now the divine can speak directly to them. You know, modern world playing a game of musical chairs, you know, music stops and everybody scrambles for a chair. Identity chair, relationship chair, job chair. You know, but see, the ancient part of us goes, I never ever wanted to play musical chairs. I'm going free range. I'm ecstatic. I'm sacred. I'm free range. You know, I'm not minding the exclusion of the culture. I'm willing to cooperate with everything, and I'm wondering what it means and wondering where the path would open. So I love, you know, from Michael Gruber's a novelist who writes kind of esoteric thrillers, because I like a dark delving, as long as it's followed by redemption. And something I just kind of inhaled from one of his novels that I like so much. So he's got an indigenous character, Moye, and Moye is a shaman, lives in the in the jungle, who's just heard that a large corporation's planning to destroy his lands. And there's a renegade priest who is his good friend who's told him of this horrible thing. Anyway, it's a pretty relevant novel. But Moye, the character, the shaman, knew that the world was ruled by Ryuxit, the harmony of the different children of jaguar, tree, rock, snake, fish, bird, all together with humans. And what was not Ryuxit, what was not harmony, was Siwix, disharmony, those things that were disharmonious. And one did not love the disharmonious. But his friend said that one could love Siwix, one could love disharmony, and by loving it, change it into harmony. And not only that, but a better and deeper harmony than existed before. And Moye would have certainly have dismissed all of this as dead white people's nonsense if he'd not visited his friend's spirit in a dream. And there he found not the shriveled, sad soul characteristic of the Wycheron white people, but something immense and powerful, Ryuxit beyond Ryuxit. So I love this as something we take away in our magic backpacks. To love disharmony back into harmony creates a greater harmony than existed before. You know, this is, again, the Venus to balance out the hyper-yang. You know, there's a million things that I will not address, but you can, a million ways to play with me. Story of Venus, the trickster redeemer, woman trickster redeemer. Yeah. But we say, let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. To protect wolves, let's become like wolves. To protect water, let's become like water. You know, it's also part of the dynamic of now that we're all kind of doing. Saturn says, slow way down, and Jupiter says, speed up. When we put them together, it goes slow way down in order to speed up in a good way, in order to increase the efficacy. And when we slow water down with berms, the more we slow water down when we irrigate a field, the deeper and faster it infiltrates. So the more we slow down with our dedication, the faster we infiltrate, like water. So that's a kind of crucial dynamic, and the Neptune thing. So to complete, and there's more fun on Monday night if you want, but kind of deeper delving and working with all these things. But we might just have a dedication now to each one of us being agents of spiraling good into the memosphere. We go, everybody, you know, put our hands up and back away from certainty, and nobody gets hurt. You know, everybody back up and move away from petroleum. You know, so let us not be imposing, constraining certainty on liberating mystery, which is, again, why wonder is such an invitation. You know, when we even make just the mudra, you know, wonder, I wonder, it forms our body into a chalice, an invitational chalice of beseeching inquiry, you know, which is intrinsically humble, humus. Again, like the Mayan word for human, like the English word for human, you know, one who owes, one who is, you know, humble, one who is willing to cooperate with big mystery, not one who's important. You know, I love Andrew Slack working with the Harry Potter novels and guiding young activists, young teenagers, saying just because you can't vote doesn't mean you can't be magically effective in the world. And they're doing great things, you know, with relief to Haiti and all kinds of stuff. And Andrew Slack says, what if fantasy that we were taught was escapist, you know, is in fact an invitation to deeper participatory mystery? So we love that. So as our very last model, yes, we will be ally etiquette moving away for our allies, the gambles. So I would like to say, to plant in hearts, just to wonder about, you know, are we willing to give up our addiction to having an enemy? Wouldn't that be cool? Scripting opposition, deriving importance from opposition, you know, tossing it into the cauldron, tossing polarity into the cauldron, remembering to be magically effective. It says, you know, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, rah, 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 and you'll only get hot hyper-yang. What two needs is three, which is the invitation of the unifying story. You know, may we all be agents of that. You know, may we practice, you know, critique and then the blessing. I love the phrase that says tyrants don't care, or leaders don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love each other. And we transform that into tyrants and leaders don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love the earth. You know, again, if we are offering ourselves, the unifying story of the earth can dissolve false boundaries, the infantile nation state boundaries, all of that. And just, again, to remind us that we are lucky, scientific study of luck kind of proved at Cambridge University that luck increases to the degree that we run on the fuel of curiosity and generosity. If we're like, oh, what's that, the $20 bill? Here, let me buy you a drink. Lucky, you know, something to play on. So something to take away now is, you know, to call upon all the things that we love syncretizing. We want, you know, Sufi, Jamaican, Mesoamerican, Middle Eastern, Southwestern, South African, indigenous, animistic, juju, as part of our, you know, cauldron that we're brewing. You know, again, lots of ways to play in Coyote Network News. But let's just say the beautiful word, ashe, in a moment. It's the Yoruba word. It means let that which is said incarnate into matter. And so, and only if you're up for this, you know, but to say, let us be agents of inviting, dedicating, blessing, and spiraling forth into the memosphere, the most irresistibly eloquent, all-inclusive, invitational story of collaborating with everything and honoring all flora and fauna on this planet. And if we are willing to be that, on the count of three, we would say, ashe. One, two, three. Ashe! Thank you, team.